Motherhood has been used to oppress and exploit women for centuries, but it doesn't have to be this way, and as mothers, we're ready for a revolution. We love our kids, but we struggle with losing our identities, bearing the weight of motherhood without enough support, and striving to meet those impossible standards of what it means to be a good mother. It's time to openly discuss how motherhood is deeply affected by patriarchy, racism, and capitalism, so that we can break free of these systems. As mothers, we know our work is valuable and has radical potential to birth a more equitable and inclusive future for ourselves and our children. Welcome to the Rebel Mothers Podcast. I'm your host, Susie Fischleader, and together we'll explore the challenges of modern motherhood and reclaim mothering as an act of liberation. Hello, everybody. All right, you ready? Grab your headphones, grab your favorite sparkling water, because in today's episode, we're talking about mommy wine culture, alcohol, the patriarchy, and motherhood. I'm about to spill some serious tea, or should I say mocktail, on why this topic is more than just a lighthearted meme. If you've ever felt like the mom in need of a timeout with a glass of Chardonnay, or if you're curious about why alcohol and motherhood are such a potent mix, this episode is for you. Now, whenever I write or post about this topic, alcohol and motherhood, I always receive at least a few private DMs from friends or followers telling me their story, and they always have a story, about their relationship with alcohol. Sometimes their messages are defensive, which is always interesting to me why they feel like they need to defend their relationship with alcohol. But more and more women these days are really examining the role that drinking plays in their life, especially when they become a mother. Because the thing is, alcohol is completely ubiquitous. It's everywhere. More than half of adults have had a drink in the last 30 days. We drink to relax. We drink to celebrate. We drink to socialize and connect. We drink to forget and numb out. We drink out of boredom. We drink to sleep better. We drink to seem more sophisticated. We drink for fun. We drink just because someone puts a drink in our hands. Alcohol is everywhere. And unfortunately, these days, it's also intimately connected with motherhood. In fact, the first time I ever really thought about not drinking was when I found out I was pregnant with my first baby. I'm like, you can't drink when you're pregnant. I'm going to be a mom. But then I had to pretend to drink so I wouldn't get called up by friends because I didn't want to tell them I was pregnant yet, right? I think many women who've gone through their 20s have experienced that. If there's one night where you're not drinking, everyone's like, oh my gosh. Now, the mommy wine culture is something we're all familiar with too, even if we don't know it by that name. There are all these, you know, quote unquote, funny memes and jokes about the message that moms need alcohol to get through motherhood. You'll see t-shirts that say Momosa, wine glasses that say Moms Turn to Wine, posts and gifts with a mom drinking behind the words Mommy Needs a Time Out, and so on. Right? There's a sarcastic coloring book called Mommy Drinks Because You Cry. There's a wine called Mom Juice. There's even a Wikipedia page about the phenomenon of a wine mom. Heck, I even posted some of them myself. Every year, I'm reminded about a Facebook post I made in 2016 that reads, Sam's out of town this week and I'm home alone with three kids. Send rosé. Wine has become a symbol of relaxation and self-care for women and particularly mothers. And some people defend wine mom culture as a form of lighthearted humor and a means of self-expression for women navigating the difficulties of motherhood. But it's actually becoming increasingly unfunny, and there's just got to be a better way of addressing the challenges of motherhood besides drinking them away. The stats on women and alcohol aren't great. Research shows that alcohol use and misuse among women are increasing, and while alcohol misuse by anyone presents serious health concerns, women who drink have a higher risk of certain alcohol-related problems compared to men. Women, compared to men, have had larger increases in alcohol-related emergency room visits, hospitalizations, and deaths over the last 20 years. An estimated 59,000 women die from excessive alcohol use, making alcohol one of the leading preventable causes of death. And yes, more men still die every year from alcohol, but the number of women is increasing more quickly. And in a 2022 CDC research, they found that nearly 14% of pregnant people reported drinking alcohol, and about 5% reported binge drinking while they were pregnant in the past 30 days. And that's just not, that's like just the people who reported it, right? So today, let's talk about alcohol and motherhood. What is this cultural obsession with drinking? And how does it affect mothers? Now, the good news is Gen Z consumers are more sober curious than any other generation. And I do think the whole mommy wine culture is on the decline, at least the circles I run in. I don't see it nearly as prevalent as I did, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. Alcohol is still everywhere, though. And I bet you can guess the social systems that support it. Yep, our good old friends, the patriarchy, capitalism, colonialism, and white supremacy. In fact, there's a great article I'll link to I just read that during research for this episode, it talks about the racial and socioeconomic dimensions of wine mom culture, noting that it predominantly features white, suburban, middle to upper class women, but the consequences of such portrayals can differ significantly for women of color. Here's a quote from the article. Quote, "The same imagery that white wine moms deploy as comedy, the harried mother at the end of her rope, reaching for a nerve-steadying glass of Chardonnay, is often weaponized against black and brown mothers. Many are all too aware that Child Protective Services would swoop in and criminalize their parenting decisions, an occurrence nicknamed Jane Crow. Wine mom culture lets white women cosplay as bad moms because they're given the benefit of the doubt that BIPOC moms aren't afforded. When white women share wine mom memes, the reaction is often, of course you're not really a bad mom, you just play one on IG." End quote. So there's a lot more here than just addressing some funny memes, right? And in fact, when I stopped drinking alcohol in 2020, I did so as a form of activism. I'd made some connections about alcohol as a tool of the patriarchy and decided I'd had enough. And I will tell you my personal story about drinking later on in this episode, but first let's dive into a brief history of women and alcohol so we can see where we're coming from. So our relationship with alcohol has always been complex. There's evidence to suggest that intentionally fermented beverages existed at least as early as the Neolithic period, about 10 to 12,000 years ago. Cultures in ancient Egypt, India, Babylon, Mesoamerica, China, and basically all over the world have all had rituals and ceremonies where alcohol played a part. Early in the medieval period, the Catholic Church taught that alcohol was a gift of God and created to be used in moderation for pleasure, enjoyment, and health, although drunkenness was viewed as a sin. Alcohol has been a cultural staple of humans for thousands of years. And women have had their own unique history with alcohol as well. Back in the Middle Ages, women played a significant role in brewing beer and selling alcohol. Brewing was often considered women's work, and women brewers enjoyed a form of financial independence and status within their communities. However, as societies transitioned to more patriarchal structures and brewing became more professionalized, women's participation in the alcohol industry became increasingly marginalized and fewer. Then during the Victorian era and in the early 20th century, it became socially inappropriate for women to openly consume alcohol in many Western societies. The temperance movement gained momentum, fueled by concerns about alcohol abuse and its impact on families. Women played a prominent role in the prohibition movement, advocating for the banning of alcohol sales and consumption. Temperance reformers blamed demon rum for corrupting American culture and leading to violence, immorality, and death. So prohibition lasted from 1920 to 1933, and while this movement ultimately failed to eliminate alcohol entirely, it had a lasting impact on alcohol regulation and cultural attitudes toward drinking. After World War II, alcohol marketing began targeting women as consumers, framing alcohol consumption as a symbol of independence and empowerment. Advertisements depicted women enjoying cocktails and wine in glamorous settings, right? Appealing to notions of sophistication and modernity. Drinking was a way to be cool. It was a way to embrace our new freedom and liberation as women. We didn't have to be stuffy, depression-age housewives anymore. Now we could have a martini and a cigarette. Eventually, we could go on to have a beer at a football game, take tequila shots on the beach, have a whiskey with the guys, and show off our sophistication by sniffing wine and proclaiming that we caught hints of chocolate, tree bark, lemongrass, right? So this marketing strategy of, you know, alcohol consumption as a feminist act of rebellion against gendered roles really played a part in encouraging women to drink more alcohol. And that brings us to today. Looking at the marketing of alcohol, globally, alcohol ad spending was over $7 billion last year, and alcohol sales are nearly $750 billion. So in her book, Quit Like a Woman, The Radical Choice Not to Drink in a Culture Obsessed with Alcohol, which you will hear me reference over and over again in this episode, the author, Holly Whitaker, draws parallels between the marketing strategies that was used for cigarettes and the marketing strategies used for alcohol, particularly in their targeting of women, and also something called engineered controversy. Well, what does that mean? Well, have you ever heard that a glass of red wine is actually good for your heart? That it's possible to drink responsibly? These phrases, this is part of engineered controversy. And the cigarette industry did it for decades to kind of muddle and confuse the public about the very clear dangers of smoking. There were lines like, there just isn't enough research. Nothing can be proved. So even though studies were coming out that was showing links of cigarette smoking with lung cancer and other dangers, decades went by before we really caught on and stopped smoking all the time. The alcohol industry has a similar take. If you visit the site responsibility.org, you'll see messages like promoting responsible alcohol decisions and empowering adults to make a lifetime of responsible alcohol choices as part of a balanced lifestyle. However, as Whitaker points out in her book, quote, if you look a little closer, you'll notice that this site is run by the Foundation for Advancing Alcohol Responsibility. And if you dig a little deeper on the site, you'll find that this organization is sponsored by the kind-hearted, well-meaning folks at Bacardi, Beam Suntory, Brown-Forman, Constellation Brands, Diageo, I don't know how to say that, Edrickson, Jägermeister, Moët Hennessy, and Pernod Ricard. Pernod Ricard? I don't know. I can't pronounce a lot of these. Anyway, end quote. These are world leaders of alcohol sales and producers of alcohol. How helpful of them to create this website for us for responsible alcohol consumption. So when I picked up this book, the Quit Like a Woman book in 2019, this was one of the first things that really pissed me off. I hate feeling manipulated. And it seems clear that the alcohol industry is working very hard to manipulate us all. And it's gotten very good at marketing to women. You know, they created specific products and product categories created primarily for women. Things that were sweeter, fizzier, marketed as more feminine drinks. When I was younger, it was Zima and Mike's Hard Lemonade, and now it's White Claw. So, besides extremely effective marketing, is there any other reason alcohol consumption has been increasing over the last 20 years? Well, an article in the New York Times suggests that it's because of social and economic stressors, including poverty, stagnant or declining incomes, loss of blue-collar jobs, and disintegration of family units. Anxiety and depression are on the rise, and alcohol is frequently offered as a balm for everything. And frankly, it's very good, at first, at numbing away those uncomfortable feelings that we aren't well equipped to deal with. So what about mothers? Well, we're all familiar with that societal pressure placed on mothers to fulfill a certain idealized image of the perfect mom. So in addition to fears about politics, fears about the environment, mothers often have like this perfect mom ideal they're trying to live up to, right? You're trying to live up to being nurturing, self-sacrificing, effortlessly managing multiple responsibilities. And these expectations create immense pressure for mothers to excel in every aspect of their lives. Not only are you expected to have it all, you're expected to be perfect at it all. And of course, this expectation is totally unrealistic and often leads to feelings of inadequacy and failure, and really has a negative effect on maternal mental health and well-being. So you have a bunch of moms out there who are struggling to cope, and then you bring in an industry that delivers calculating, deliberate, and highly successful marketing to women and mothers, promising this fun, liberating, relaxing, good time in a bottle, right? So when I started to put all these pieces together, the rise in marketing towards women, the rise in anxiety and depression, the use of alcohol to numb away all the stress in our lives, this is when I started to make the connection that alcohol is actually a very effective tool of the patriarchy and of these larger systems of domination that serve to benefit people at the top at the expense of people at the bottom. Because the alcohol industry has successfully marketed alcohol as something that represents fun, freedom, independence, coolness, power, and we drink it to feel like we embody those things. But it's bullshit. Alcohol does not make us more fun, free, cool, or powerful. In fact, it's making us sicker, more tired, more anxious, and more depressed. And then we are less willing or less able to raise our fists and burn the systems to the ground. We're so numbed out by alcohol that we aren't motivated to tear it all apart. That's how it's a tool of the patriarchy. Okay, so now I'm going to share my personal story of giving up alcohol because I think my story is pretty common, might resonate with some of you. So I do not drink alcohol anymore. And I say that with an asterisk at the end of that statement because there's more to it than that, but I'll get into those details shortly. I had my last official drink on December 26th, 2020. And now, more than 3 years later, I can count the individual number of alcoholic drinks I've had since then. So when people ask why I'm not drinking, and to be honest, they rarely do. Nobody asks. Nobody cares. It's me. I'm usually the one who like brings it up. But I give a different answer depending on how well I know them or how interested they seem in the answer. If it's like a casual acquaintance and I probably won't see them for a while, I just tell people I'm not drinking right now. And they accept it that I'm like on a cleanse or something. Sometimes I might expand and tell them that alcohol just stopped making me feel good. And then I realized I felt worse after I drank and that it wasn't worth it to me. But sometimes, if it's someone who might be really interested, I tell them the truth. I stopped drinking because I consider alcohol to be a tool of oppression and not drinking it is part of my activism. Sort of how like environmentalists will be vegan to protect the planet, I don't drink to protect women and mothers. And look, I really used to enjoy drinking. I associated the pop of a champagne bottle with celebration, right? The clink of red wine glasses with a date night, a cold copper mug with summer afternoons, and that warmth and relaxation spreading over my shoulders after my first glass. My husband and I used to host a monthly wine club with a group of friends, and it was always so much fun. And I was never a real partier in college, right? Other friends could be doing shots at the bar, and I was usually like sipping mine and trying not to fall asleep. But as I got older, alcohol, especially wine, just became part of my life. And even when I was drinking every weekend and many days during the week, I never felt like an alcoholic. And that's actually part of the problem because we've created this dichotomy, this binary. You're either an alcoholic who has a problem or you're not, right? I didn't identify as an alcoholic, therefore I didn't have a problem with alcohol. Except that's really limiting. And as the years went on, it became clear that I might not be an alcoholic, but alcohol certainly wasn't serving me anything. Every time I drank, I'd be a little bit more irritable with the kids. You know, bedtime would be that much harder after a glass or two of wine. I'd wake up with puffy eyes because I slept horribly. Or maybe I'd make poor eating decisions and like eat an entire bag of veggie straws by myself. And I didn't like knowing that I was willingly ingesting a neurotoxin that made my depression worse. And then when that buzz of relaxation wore off, I just felt impatient and irritable and sluggish, and I usually had a headache. None of these things were dangerous or putting me in harm's way. You know, largely, I'm sure, due to my class and race privileges, I was very rarely at risk of being in an unsafe situation. I have never blacked out or done something I couldn't remember because of alcohol. I've never received a DUI. None of my issues with alcohol were life-threatening, just not great. I didn't have like a quote problem with alcohol, but I had a problem with alcohol. It wasn't doing anything good in my life. So when I read Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker, it was like this bolt of lightning. Because yes, she actually does talk about alcohol as a tool of patriarchy and capitalism, but she also really talks about this binary and says you don't need to be a quote alcoholic to realize that alcohol is still a problem for you. She says there's actually no such thing as an alcoholic. She really challenges this very binary view and says that black and white thinking of either being an alcoholic or not can be harmful and stigmatizing, especially for people who want to reassess their drinking habits without that label, right? So what she's really doing is helping to empower individuals to reevaluate their relationship with alcohol without the fear of being labeled or judged and to decide, is alcohol really serving me anymore? Is it actually bringing anything positive to my life? Maybe I can have a problem with it, not in the way it's been positioned before, but just because I don't like the way it makes me feel. So I read that book in 2019. I knew I wanted to take a break, so I spent most of 2020 trying to find new and different associations and habits so I didn't always just turn to drinking, right? And I started doing what I call sobriety test runs, and you hear these all the time, sober October, dry July, things like that. And one bright spot of the pandemic was actually we weren't going out, we weren't traveling, we weren't dining out, so I wasn't faced with the social temptations to drink. Sometimes I'd cave and I'd have a glass of wine, and then like halfway through, I'd realize I don't even like this, but I would finish it out of habit. So I spent, it was almost a year of really just reflecting and noticing my relationship to drinking before I decided I'm done. And so it was Christmas 2020, and I told Sam, I was like, my husband, I'm like, hey, I'm done drinking. I'm done. And he's like, forever? I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to think about forever right now, but we opened up a bottle. This is going to be my last drink. So we opened up my favorite Napa Cabernet, and it was delicious and it was amazing. And I enjoyed Christmas with my family, and that was that. And then, this is funny. So then the next day, we go over to a friend's house, and they handed me like an apple cider, and I just drank it, like out of habit. And again, I finished it, and I was like, wait a second, crap. My final drink was supposed to be this beautiful glass of Cabernet Sauvignon that like I savored and enjoyed. And now my final drink is like a crappy apple cider. So anyway, it's complicated, right? It's hard. There's so many associations and habits and social cues that we have associated with drinking. So now here's my caveat. Here's my asterisk. Since that day, December 26th, 2020, that I officially chose to stop drinking, I have had some drinks. One with my best friend during a trip to New York City, another with a group of friends on the beach. I drank Portuguese wine during a family trip to Lisbon last year, and I had a glass of champagne at my friend's wedding. So then why do I say I don't drink alcohol anymore? Because it actually makes things a lot easier for me. When I was spending that year kind of trying to drink less or paying attention to my drinking, I was actually thinking about it all the time. Like, am I going to drink tonight? How much? Just wine? Should I have a cocktail? And I remember trying to drink only on special occasions, but it feels like everything is actually a special occasion, right? There's always a holiday or it's someone's birthday or there's a neighborhood party. And then it becomes like, hey, it's Friday night. And then it just becomes, oh my gosh, I got through Tuesday. Let's celebrate. So for me, it made it a lot easier to assume the identity of someone who doesn't drink alcohol because then I actually think about it less. So here's a similar example. I don't smoke. I don't smoke cigarettes. I've never smoked cigarettes. Being a smoker is not part of who I am. So when I'm out and about and I see someone smoking or, you know, back in the day, we used to go out and people used to offer me cigarettes, I wasn't ever thinking about it and trying to decide if I should have a smoke or not. I just don't smoke. So there was no mental energy, there was no mental load weighing me down about this decision. And so now I see alcohol the same way. I don't drink. So I never have to debate myself on if I should drink this time or not. And it just makes it so much easier. I don't drink. And then if there is a truly special, once in a lifetime occasion, like my friend's wedding or a trip to Portugal, I will accept a glass to celebrate and enjoy it wholeheartedly. If I'm only drinking once or twice a year, I'll definitely remember that occasion. There's two quotes in Whitaker's book that I love, and one is this, quote, "It isn't about not getting to drink, but about not having to drink," end quote. So that really changed the way I think about it. And then side note, and my other favorite quote is this, "Sobriety, if it is anything, is paying attention, seeing the wonder and the beauty around us that we so easily sprint by on our way to the next thing. And this is more than fun. This is actually living," end quote. Feels like a very yoga thing for me. So this is interesting. So I want to talk about this word sober and sobriety because I noticed a vast difference in the way people responded to me when I say I don't drink alcohol to when I say I'm sober. Sober has a very clear connotation with it that means I don't drink alcohol because I'm an alcoholic, right? I had a problem with drinking, so now I'm sober. People, and the thing is, people don't actually ask you any questions. When you say you're sober, they stop talking. They're like, oh, okay, she must have a problem. And because my stopping drinking is actually an activist choice, I actually want to have those conversations and have them asking me questions sometimes. Sometimes I just don't want to talk about it. But, and look, I mean, I don't know, it's complicated. I definitely want to be part of the ending the stigma around admitting that alcohol doesn't do anything good in your life. But I still felt weird about having people think I was an alcoholic. So that was actually a really good self-awareness practice, like noticing how I felt in response to people judging me, or at least my perception was that they were judging me, probably because of how I felt about it. There's so many layers here. So I don't say I'm sober. I say I don't drink alcohol. And because the truth is that I do drink on very tiny, infrequent occasions. And because I want to keep the dialogue open with people who might be interested to hear my take on it, I just choose to say, I don't drink alcohol. That's it. I don't drink. So there it is. That's my personal story of why and how I stopped drinking. So if you've gotten this far in the episode, maybe you're thinking you'd like to examine your own relationship with alcohol. What's next? Do you just quit drinking forever? Look, I'm not a sobriety coach. I'm not an expert by any means. I just know that when I think about quitting forever, like when I say I'm never having a drink again for the rest of my life, it makes me want to rebel a little bit and drink. So that's not a useful framing for me. I just don't drink. And I definitely know that I'm not going to have a drink today. And that is just a much more realistic and helpful framing to me. So I try not to think of it in terms of like, I'm never drinking again, right? I do have a few resources and tips to recommend if you do want to look into this deeper. First, that book I referenced, Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker, was phenomenal. It really helped me a lot. I highly recommend it. Also, self-reflection. Take some time to reflect on your drinking habits. What are your motivations for drinking? What is the impact alcohol has on your life? What are your thoughts, feelings, and experiences related to alcohol? What do you think of giving up drinking? And like, how does that make you feel? Why do you think you feel that way? So learning how to be really mindful about your relationship to alcohol helps take the next step, whatever that is. And like I said, this process took me like a year. When I finally made the decision that I was done drinking, it actually wasn't that hard. Partly because I'd been thinking about it for so long, but partly because by then I felt really settled in my decision to quit. I wasn't being forced into it by anyone else. I wasn't stopping out of a sense of like guilt or shame. I just wanted to stop. I was ready to be done. Educating yourself helps too. Learn about the effects of alcohol on your physical and your mental health, as well as its societal and cultural influences. Alcohol is ethanol. And here's what Wikipedia has to say about ethanol. Quote, ethanol is a volatile, flammable, and colorless liquid. It is a psychoactive recreational drug and the active ingredient in alcoholic drinks. It has modern medical applications as an antiseptic, disinfectant, solvent for some medications, and antidote for some poisonings. It is used as a chemical solvent and in the synthesis of organic compounds and as a fuel source. End quote. It's actually the fuel used in rocket ships. It's rocket fuel. We're drinking rocket fuel. Learning that certainly made it less appealing. So what else? Now, then when you stop drinking, you need to find some alternative activities, right? If drinking is like an activity for you, you're just going to have to find something else to do, right? Especially social activities that don't revolve around alcohol. Hosting a monthly wine club and then trying to stop drinking, that's not going to work. It's going to be really, you're setting yourself up to make it really, really, really hard. So you're going to have to maybe seek out friends and a community of people who don't drink. One of the hardest things for me to give up was the Sunday afternoon glass of rosé I'd have if it was like a beautiful sunny day out and my husband is grilling and the music is playing and my kids are playing outside. So I would sort of like wander around like, what do I do with myself? So I started making myself little spritzers or mocktails. And my favorite one is guava and mango juice mixed with ginger beer and sparkling water. Oh my gosh, it's so good. So delicious. So like I'll make that, I'll pour it in a wine glass, and it's going to satisfy whatever it was that I was craving in the glass of rosé. Additionally, you might have to develop some new coping strategies, especially if alcohol helps you manage stress and anxiety. What are some triggers that prompt you to drink? What is the thing that happens that makes you say, oh God, I need a drink? And then what are some possible alternative coping mechanisms you could do instead? Can you go for a walk? Do some breathing exercises? Call a friend? Drink a ginger ale and get that like hit of sugar? Maybe you need to talk to a therapist or seek professional support. And I'm going to link a few resources in the show notes about that. And you also really do need to prepare yourself, especially in the first year, about how you're going to handle situations where you'd normally drink. Seriously, you really do have to plan for this in advance, because when you're at a party and someone hands you a glass of wine, it's going to feel really awkward to say, oh, no, thanks, I'm not drinking alcohol. And then it's like you hear the record scratch and the music stops and everyone stares at you and someone points and laughs like Nelson on The Simpsons. Ha ha! Right? No, that actually isn't going to happen, I promise. Our brains are so good at imagining the worst case scenarios. So actually you can take advantage of that and come up with how you are going to handle, you know, what? Meeting a client for happy hour, going to a Super Bowl party, going on a fancy date, going to a baby shower. What are you going to say? What are you going to drink instead? Are you going to come bringing your own water, which I have done? I bring sparkling water pretty much everywhere. My favorite cop-out is, I'm not drinking right now. And everyone just assumes, again, you're on a health detox or something. They say no more about it. And honestly, you know, once you really actually embrace not drinking and you start talking about it more, you will be amazed at how many other people also don't drink alcohol. So that's it, my friends. There we have it. The intersection of alcohol, the patriarchy, motherhood. It's complex, it's multifaceted, and it warrants examination and self-reflection. As we've explored throughout this episode, alcohol consumption has deep historical roots, and the rise of the mommy wine culture reflects not only the normalization of alcohol consumption among mothers, but also those pressures and expectations placed on women to fulfill that idealized image of the perfect mom, which helps contribute to this rise in drinking. So taking steps to examine and potentially alter your relationship with alcohol requires self-reflection, education, and, you know, cultivating alternative coping strategies. By reframing our understanding of alcohol and motherhood, and by challenging these social pressures and social norms, we can work together towards dismantling the patriarchal structures that perpetuate harmful drinking patterns and prioritize the well-being of women and mothers. Stay tuned for more empowering stories and insightful discussions in future episodes of Rebel Mothers. Remember to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast to spread the message far and wide. Learn more at susiefishleader.com, and thank you for being part of the motherhood revolution.